as he stuck his neck in.
What happened to Anne?
She should be back.
She had a few more minutes since they were late in letting us set up, so we started a little late.
I'll start.
Yeah.
All right. My name is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
And I found many of the things you had written on the website very thoughtful and insightful as to what has been going on. I think that a lot of the issues you have raised, because I've been sort of, with a number of other people here, pretty much observing things firsthand for months now, there are a lot of people who have been raising similar issues, perhaps in a different way, but similar critiques for months, and have been wanting to have real critiques, and I've been outspoken in certain situations about these things. So it's going on. It may not be apparent to some, but you have to sort of plunge into it to see it going on. Secondly, the idea that they didn't, and I share all your critiques about the weaknesses of the theories of autonomy and all that. I mean, I've asked them, what's the end game? What's your theory of revolution? How do you actually think you're the top of the state? And I get vague answers that don't mean anything. So that's, to me, been a real problem because, I think that it has to be done with direct action and nonviolence, but a mass movement. And I think they're so rigid with their, Occupy becomes sort of a messianic cult, to be stressed at times with some, that it's a panacea, that their rigidity in not seeing the diversity, it's only occupying, is only a tactic. It's not a philosophy, and that's why I have real problems. Because, I've done all sorts of political things throughout my life, including that what they're doing, but also going up to Capitol Hill. So, I tend to view it a little differently. I see that they're heading to get into a trick bag, if you will. And they have to be reflective and honest, and there has to be this kind of discussion where people, and as well as you all, people have to, not be rigid in talking about it.
Okay, I'm just going to take this opportunity. If you haven't made a donation, please do so at any time. The jar is right there on the table. Next. And I think the panel can answer any point that they want.
All right, so I guess my question was, sort of been portrayed
that... Name, please.
My name's Ben. It's sort of been portrayed that Occupy has been sort of resistant to theory. Then there's also the claim that it sort of is deriving the ideas of David Graeber, John Holloway, and sort of the modernist and anarchist theory. So I'm not really sure how to reconcile those two. If they're resistant to theory, but yet they're influenced by this theorist, then perhaps there's not this point of theory. I don't know if you can comment on that.
Yes.
Lisa, I think some of the things that you cite within the Marxist humanist organization have a lot in common with Occupy, very, very much so. We're a very young, I will not even call us a movement. I would say that we are a network, more of autonomous clusters. And a lot of times that causes, that's problematic for people because they want to know, how are you going to unify all of these autonomous ideas? What's that unity going to be? How are you going to come up with one thing? And not only is that not possible, but no one wants it. And for me, that's a very antiquated idea of what unity is. It does not, address who we are or where we can go with that. It's stifling and it creates this kind of binary continuum that is a problem that we're fighting against right now. And in terms of taking theory, there's a lot of ideas of theories, but now these theories that have been theories are now becoming practice. And that's that's where the problem lies, because some things are theories that inspire you, and then when you start to use them in practice, it doesn't quite hold up. So you've got to be open enough to be able to look at it, have a critique, and then of course have a conversation, a discussion about it, which is something that I'm very much involved in, is constantly doing that. Engaging, being engaged, being back engaged, and things like that.
Anyone on the panel want to jump in? Or anyone in the audience?
Yeah, I mean, I'm Andrew. I obviously agree with most everything that's said here. Just two comments. One, some of the recent stuff that's been coming from people like David Graeber and Mike is talking about Marina Citrin, I think there's a real shift, to put it mildly, in their formulation of what the occupation is about. I mean, still in the literature, you have people saying that we are rebuilding society. This is an initial step, not just to question and work out ideas and where we want to go, but these activities are the rebuilding of society. And, you know, it looks like Marina is trying to have it both ways there. But I want to say that I think my one thing where I didn't agree with what the panelists said, I don't think it's fair to say that Occupy is not a mass movement. It might not yet be a mass movement, but I don't want to give up hope on it. It's a very variegated, heterogeneous thing. There's a lot of contradictions, and that's what Marxist humanism focuses on, is the internal differentiation within all of the movements and the possibility to have what, like Hegel called, second negativity, where you're not, you know, just stuck where you are, but you can transcend these contradictions. There are a lot of people, you know, who are new, and as you're saying, you know, there's a lot of discussion, and Graeber used the term recriminations and stuff. There's a lot that we don't know that's going on, and I don't think we want to write off people, you know, and you get new people, and they want a mass movement because they really want to change things, and they want to be big and united. And when people who haven't had any political experience come to this idea, they say, well, let's try to have something that has broad appeal and, you know, lowest common denominator that we can all agree on. We've all been there. I've been there. I was there for God knows how many years. It's a natural thing to think. You've got to go through a lot of stages and processes so you can see that that's not the best way to create a unity. So, you know, please, let's focus on the divisions or the heterogeneity, and certainly there's just not one tendency, and it doesn't seem to even be as dominant as it was, and let's see to if we can try to build and move forward from what is there now.
So, I'm Aaron. One of the things I'm most excited about Occupy Wall Street is it's given me, someone who's been interested in Marx for a while, the first opportunity to participate in something that looks like it could be a mass movement. It was tremendously exciting, even though I've had critiques of it and the guiding thoughts behind it since day one. I don't want to lose track of the kind of potential I saw in it. But I'm increasingly upset by is the inability to adapt, the inability to be reflective and learn from what seems like shortcomings or mistakes. You know, there was 50,000 people in the street, and that's a lot of direct action. But if it doesn't do anything at the end of the day or by day two, then let's not be self-congratulatory. You know, if at the end of the evening 30,000 people sit down in a new park and then an hour later are kicked out by police, that's a horrible, you know, waste of resources and planning and everyone's time and inappropriate sublimation of radical energies. So there's got to be new forms that we can think through. There's got to be new ways to to develop a more consistent approach where we can have real concrete successes in advancing a social struggle. And that's why I'm starting to wane in some of my excitement about the Occupy Wall Street movement. It doesn't seem like it's learning from those mistakes.
My name's Mike, and I want to definitely echo what was just said in regards to how exciting it was to go down there. I was at work maybe three blocks away from Zuccotti Park, and I remember that I wasn't there on the weekend, but that Monday I made sure to go and went there, you know, every day thereafter. And, you know, I remember, though, the night that I went home thinking, okay, this is, you know, this is distressing, was seeing Rick Wolf down there. And he had a huge audience, and it was, you know, he was even making it more of a populist kind of, basically pandering appeal than he usually does. And it's exactly, it is hard. So now he's coming out with, he has a book that was just published called, like, Occupying the Economy, or Occupy Capitalism. Occupy is now like a brand that you can sell books with. And to Jim's point, I think there obviously have been similar critiques going on for months, and I'm trying to keep up with all of them because they're there. But, you know, it's obviously a platform. Occupy, there's a big opportunity here, and Occupy Wall Street has to be receptive to organizing this struggle of ideas. How does it foster those debates? Ann and I went to a think tank discussion at 60 Wall Street that was really bad, and it was really bad not only because the speaker, you know, was giving not a very good spiel, but I think the forum itself was not conducive to think tanking, as I would imagine it. It was more like, you know, how does this relate to Occupy Wall Street? Don't talk about it in anything other than how can we grow the movement, this movement. If you get off topic, they're very careful about wrangling you back in. And, you know, there's a real concerted effort by facilitators down there to make sure that, you know, things don't get off track as far as, you know, what you talk about and what you don't talk about. There's very codified notions of what is acceptable discourse there that I've found, my personal experience. And I'm sorry, but, you know, I think that some theories are better than others. If I talk to somebody that is going to engage in a discussion about ending the Fed or fractional reserve banking or something like that, I'm going to have it out with them to the degree that it's a productive conversation. But, you know, it's my opinion that, you know, the theories of Marx as developed by Demuskaya and other, you know, Marxists throughout, you know, 20th century and before that, are better at explaining the world than conspiracy theories or, you know, populist, you know, Ron Paul style politics. That's just one example where it's clear that, you know, there are just some theories that are better at explaining the world than others. And so the key is, how is Occupy Wall Street going to support structures, discussions, whatever, where we don't just kind of sit around? It's this very liberal idea of, like, letting everybody's ideas sit in this broth without contending with each other. I think Hegel talked about stuff like that, where you're letting these things that are contradictory just kind of stay and exist together. And it gets old real quick. So, that's it.
I'm Bill Weinberg, and I relate very strongly to a lot of what has been said here, particularly the critique of
of anti-intellectualism and the hedging on debates that need to be had, the glib utopianism of thinking that we can build a new society without actually having a, you know, hashing out an analysis of what's wrong with the old one, and the glib talk about a general strike, which was completely arrogant, obviously was not going to be a general strike. It was very worthwhile to have a big mobilization on May Day, and it's worthwhile to put forth the idea that eventually we should work towards a general strike, but sort of unilaterally declaring a general strike was glib and ridiculous, and setting ourselves up to be sucker punched by the media, because of course it was not going to be a general strike. The hedging on anti-capitalism, very unfortunate, and needs to be combated. But while I share the critique of anti-intellectualism, I also think that there is a legitimate critique of sectarianism. And if we pose these criticisms in terms which also are going to come across as arrogant and high-handed, we're not going to be heard, which is why, you know, I'm very wary of speaking in terms which are too dismissive. I mean, the notion that the Zuccotti Park occupation was a dismal failure, I think, is extremely overstated. And the notion that, for instance, that, you know, we were there at the permission of the mayor, well, I suppose technically that's true, but he wasn't doing it out of the goodness of his heart. I mean, that has to do with, you know, what E.P. Thompson calls moral economy, and the fact that we had created a sort of political balance of forces where it would have been impolitic for the mayor to summarily evict us. So, and while if you're going to pose the Zuccotti occupation's goals in these extremely sweeping and utopian terms about, you know, liberating space and building a new society, well, yeah, then it failed. But if you're going to pose it in more realistic terms, then I think it was in many ways, a tremendous success. And for the first time, I think, since the Reagan Revolution, since the early 1980s, we've interjected a radical left and even an anti-capitalist discourse into what's considered to be the legitimate spectrum of debate in this country and in the world. And this is not solely due to the Zuccotti occupation, but I think in very, very large part due to it, which sort of became the crystallization of what was been going on in a much larger sense, beginning with the Arab Spring a year earlier. Yes, if we're going to make good on this beginning, we're going to have to stop hedging about anti-capitalism, and we're going to have to directly confront all of the weird right-wing populist ideas which are being bandied about and in the movement, unfortunately. I agree with you 100% on that. But if we're going to do it effectively, I think we also have to have a bit more of a humble attitude and recognize the concrete achievements which Occupy has attained. And if I can take the liberty of asking just a purely didactic question, is the implication that C.L.R. James wrote some stuff which sort of prefigured this notion that we're now critiquing in David Graeber, and that this was opposed by Rydzinovskaya? Perhaps Anne could point me towards the actual works.
Yes. Certainly, there is a history from those early writings to today. And yes, we could find you things. And Dunayevskaya's archives are all in the guide. Oh, it's here. The guide's in the bag here. We could look up the date. Her archives are in microfilm, and they're in the library. And you could trace a good deal of that stuff. Okay, where James and Dunayevskaya split in the 1950s was over the question of the role of philosophy, the role of ideas as a force for revolution. She disagreed that the new society was already there in this one, and that all we have to do is make it explicit. She said, no, we...
And where did James put forth this idea? Do you remember offhand?
I don't remember too much.
Just in correspondence between the two of them?
No, they published things at the time.
Right.
Within, maybe not to the outside world, but within their organization. We can look it up. It's an interesting history. But I don't know whether Graver is aware of that or how many people are aware of that or what it means in the end.
Well, if you could point us towards where the actual James Donaevskaya debate took place, I'd be interested in reading it at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a publication that, a pamphlet, I'll get you. I have a question for you all. First of all, let me say to you people who have been very, very active in it, I've been only slightly active, and I'm never going to another meeting after that. My mention was the worst meeting I've ever been to in my whole life, decades of going to meetings. It was horrendous. Didn't make a bit of sense of anything. But we would love it if any or all of you would write stuff for our web journal with Sober Senses on our website, because we haven't had a kind of overall descriptive or evaluating article. We've had several critiques of certain aspects, but not something that talks about it overall. So please, write and send us articles, and then we'll have more about what's good about it or what's the mixed messages about it or whatever. I guess I'm less enthusiastic than some of my comrades here because there's such a diversity. I'm not sure how that could ever get worked out, how there could ever be a forum that thrashed out all the ideas going around. Including the libertarians and the right-wingers and the people who just want to grab onto the shirt tails of the unions and call that being with workers and all. There are just so many different things, and there's no process for making any kind of group decisions about ideas, they'll make group decisions about what activity to do, but I don't see how they're ever going to define themselves more. I'm talking about New York, I'm not talking about overall, the whole world, all kinds of great stuff is happening, and to the extent that they were partially inspired by the fact that those dumb backward Americans were engaging in political action, it's great, but the things going on around the world, you can't even compare our New York movement to. I mean, they're burning down Greece. They're taking over whole apartment buildings in Spain and Brazil and housing poor people. They're just huge things going on in the world, and our thing seems kind of small in comparison to me.
And if I could,
excuse me, that was Anne who just spoke.
Sorry.
The next person to speak will announce their name, but they had a question in the back first.
I just want to say something real quick.
Sure, sure.
But just to jump
Mike?
On, Mike, yeah. And, to what Bill said, and I agree with Anne, far from being a crystallization of the Arab Spring, I just see it as something with some American characteristics to it and not being what it's been trumped up to be. I think that's what I mean about correlation not being causation. It's almost impossible to think that right now, given an incredibly long recession, deep, deep crisis, that and off on the heels of not only Cairo, but Madison as well, that there wasn't going to be some social movement to come up. And to think that it's because of simply, you know, the democratic horizontal forms that were used, that's what created this phenomenon. Not only, and don't forget that it was a media phenomenon as well. It got a lot of attention very quickly. Thousands of articles were written about it. But I think Zuccotti was a failure in another sense as well. I don't think that, you know, if Citroen and others want to say that they're building new social relations right down there, pretty immediately, it became, and it was written about as, and lampooned, and like the Daily Show, there was a kind of a split there, right? You had the ghettoization of the west side of Zuccotti, where all the, like, the kids that were holding the place down were staying. They were, as Dunyevskaya would say, they were acting as force. And then the reason, okay, capital R, that would go there, come into the square and have the general assemblies and think the thoughts and, you know, conceptualize, would be on the east side. So right there you have this reproduction of what is so fundamental in capitalism, the division between mental and manual labor, on the site of a place where we're supposed to be, you know, reimagining social relations as they exist. You have to admit that not only are you getting free pizza from the outside, but you're recapitulating these very divisions. I didn't see people, you know, actively bringing in kids that were living down there and saying, okay, we want, you know, you to, like, lead discussion groups and report back. It was just kind of like you were holding down the fort, and then we'll come in at appointed times and run our meetings or whatever. And I do think that, and something you said about the general strike, it's this kind of this like overinflated kind of like rhetoric that's used. We're going to say it's a general strike, even though it's not a general strike. Why? Not only because we're supporting our comrades on the West Coast who wanted to call for a general strike, but we believe that this is like an education, a pedagogical like thing that we're going to build. And you hear a lot about this. If you have conversations with people, it's all about building consciousness. We're going to remind people of what you know came before. We're going to, you know, educate and talk about these things. Building consciousness seems to me a very like vanguardist notion of how movements operate, because if you want to build consciousness, that means that you have the consciousness that is like the correct line, and then other people, working people, whoever, don't have the consciousness, you know, that's necessary or whatever. So I think there's some contradiction there. Yeah. And I mean, by November, let's face it, and there were things written about this, it's like, you know, that the New York Police Department and Bloomberg did Occupy Wall Street a favor. Why is that the case? Not only because it was getting colder, but because it was getting stagnant. And I think people down there knew it. So it was a tactical retreat. You know, it's possible. I mean, I know Questlove was tweeting about how there was something big going down, that the police were amassing and doing these practice drills. And if occupiers had the wherewithal, they could have galvanized their support, they could have held down the space just the way they did whatever it was a month before, but they didn't. What were the reasons for that, right? Was it something, maybe it was a change in tactics, but I would argue that it was a failed experiment.
Okay, coming back.
My name is Damien. I'm kind of new to the scene here, but I would agree with where you guys started, that there's certain futility to occupying a park with permission from the mayor, and how just these discussions and these assemblies that they have can only go so far. But I also agree with the gentleman here in the green that said that it did accomplish a lot as far as showing the size of the support that there was. Now, I think, going back to what you said with the sign, I think most of the people, from the sense that I got of it, it's like pretty much everyone there knows that something is, you know, fucked up against us. And, you know, they never really had a sense that they could make a stand for it. They just figured it's how it goes. But now this was able to kind of set a platform for them to come out and, you know, speak with other people that had similar concerns or even different concerns. So I think it did serve that as far as just creating a platform, the conversation. So as far as I can tell, it was a good conversation to have, but you can only go for so long. Now, the way I see it, or the way I understand it from your scoreboard that we went through before, is that you're trying to inject more theory to all these discontent amongst the people. And that's definitely crucial to you know, give some direction. Even myself, I'm not really sure. Like, you guys are all name-dropping, and I'm not sure who these people are, what the theories are, or where this should be headed. So I can see the importance of doing that. But I think where it all would kind of culminate, and maybe someone can help me out how that happens, is how that becomes action. Especially, like, given, you know, like, if it's in the U.S. and if it's now, how all of this is going to actually result in, you know, some tangible for everyone, you know, for any of these dozens of issues that people are raising, you know, how can you really make a change within the system, and is it even possible? So that's one of my questions. The other one is, it seems like this Occupy kind of had a lot of different showings across the country. I'm only most familiar with what happened here in New York, and I guess Oakland got a lot of attention as well. But, like, is there, like, does any one city have, like, a better approach or a better execution at it? Like, I know, like, Philly has something, D.C. will have some, Chicago, L.A., Seattle. Like, what are the big differences? It seems like the New York one was kind of tame compared to a couple of these other ones. So, it, you know, is it better to keep it more theoretical and more amongst assembly discussions like in New York? Or, you know, is it more productive to simply go out like the, you know, the people in Oakland? And I'm guessing that Chicago and L.A. had a much more sort of like an immigration tone to it.
A what tone to it?
Immigration. Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, I guess what I'm most interested in is, you know, if this the MHI here is going to provide the theory and Occupy is going to provide the masses. And now, you know, like, going back to what you guys were saying, now, what you were saying is that how's this compared to anything that happened before? Now there's much better tools to organize people, and there's much better tools to spread the word for any one movement. So, you know, how can they collaborate, whatever Occupy Wall Street has going and whatever older movements have happened before? And but mainly that. It's like, what's like the next step of action is what I hear the question here and there, but I never quite hear an answer. Like, what would be the next step in the short term?
Lisa. I wanted to add also that well, America's a young country, and we've always been capitalistic. And the natural progression of when capitalism begins to fail the people is that a populist movement takes over. There's nothing radical about that. It just seems to be the way things happen. And without knowing, with many people converging on Zuccotti Park without knowing exactly what it was specifically they were angry about, myself included, I was just really angry, and I have learned a hell of a lot since then. But even without knowing sort of what these theories are, a lot of people are learning things. And one of the things that we have learned is that when things don't work, we do let them go. The horrible meeting doesn't exist anymore. Because it did not work, it did not serve us. We are now looking at new ways, new technologies, and using a lot of different, like, diversity of assemblies and these things. So, one of the things that's a problem is that Well, we did get a lot of attention in the beginning, but that's it. At this point, it's not that important to me on a personal level. I can't speak for anyone else, but I know for me and the work that I'm doing is about approaching things with a sense of inquiry, listening to what you're hearing, and then, you know, creating a dialogue like that to inspire one another, and then back and forth and back and forth. And this is starting to happen. So we have a really, if we want any change whatsoever, it becomes so fundamental like that to be able to just be able to have a conversation and rely on unity as being mutual respect and trust, and that would be it, in a sense. Just very good.
Thank you. I'm Aaron. So I think coming into dialogue and talking things out is very important, and it's important not just because it can motivate people, not just because it can get people excited, but because through dialogue and through exchange, we can come to approximate an appropriate theoretical description of the facts on the ground. And I think our theoretical understanding that we achieve in dialogue with people is motivational, to respond to your question, is actually the motivation, even if not explicit, behind a lot of different actions that are taken. So in the New York Occupy Wall Street, the guiding theoretical predisposition to my mind was something like reclaiming space. And so it's not an accident that one of the major forms and achievements that Occupy took was an encampment in a physical location. And so it might not immediately be clear that there was a theory that made that the form of the action. In Oakland, I think they've got a little bit more of a Marxist background, but you know they want to have a strike or want to disrupt flows of development, and so the strike on the ports for one day was actually informed by a theory. So that shutdown of the ports for even a brief amount of time wasn't just something that people got excited about in dialogue. It was something that, you know, was informed by a serious theory that people held and consciously, I think probably more consciously, acted on. So I think there's a strong connection, even if not consciously held, between your theoretical understanding of the facts on the ground and what you tend to do about it. So there's that. And I also wanted just briefly to respond to one of the concerns I think you brought up, and that's the need for kindness and humility. And I think when trying to motivate people to come out and to act and to show solidarity with what you're about, kindness is paramount. And just a general degree of being nice is always appropriate.
I'm not sure I used the word kindness.
You said humility or humbleness, I believe. And so perhaps kindness is an inappropriate translation. I apologize.
You're just a kind guy.
Okay. But my butt is when it comes to theory, people can be wrong. And I think theory advances further by being less humble and by saying when you think something is wrong, that it's wrong, and giving your best reasons. And so there's a distinction between, you know, when it's appropriate to kind of be a little bit more wishy-washy and when you've just got to draw a line.
Yes, agreed.
Okay. So
referring specifically to the notion that Zuccotti was a dismal failure, quote-unquote, which...
Okay. As an occupation.
Yeah, so okay. By its theoretical standards, to refigure social relations, yes, it failed.
Okay.
But it did other things.
But in that, there's Andrew, then this gentleman, and then Jim, and then Anne.
I'll try to be very brief. Two things that were raised were very important. I mean, the question is, how do you make theory and philosophy link it to the mass movements? We can't do that. Only the great masses of people can do that. The guy with the beard, who nobody wants to talk about, and then said, when theory grips the masses, it becomes a material force. And so we can't lead the movements. We don't want to lead the movements. If Moses can lead people into the promised land, he can lead them right back out again. All we can do is encourage, you know, that reflection and the theoretical development from below in connection with, you know, people like us, and so forth. We have certain insights. We have certain ideas that we think are relevant. We don't have the whole thing worked out by any means. I don't think anybody does. The other thing I think came from Ben that was extremely important. I think Aaron kind of raised it. There seems to be a contradiction between us critiquing dominant theories and then saying these people have no theory. Right. I think Aaron kind of went through it. Everybody's got a theory, right? And the people who say we don't need theory, what they don't want to do is discuss their theory, and they don't even see their theory as theory. They think that's just the way things are. So it's kind of dogmatic, and there's a lack of reflection and dialogue and testing with other people. And I think that that's a lot of went on. So, you know, it's sort of shorthand, these people don't want theory. They want their theories, and they don't want it to kind of be examined in a real process of give and take and reflection and working out the movement, not just on the basis of activity, because that's the theory. It goes back to the May 68 Daniel Cohn-Bendit, you know, we can pick up theory en route. We don't need to have this activity, and the forward movement of activity is going to get us there. And that is itself a theory.
One might dub it hegemon theory. Theory that you don't look at.
Okay,
I'll have to reflect on that for a second. The thing I was going to say beforehand was sort of this notion that in Occupy you have all these ideas and they sit there in this suit and they never get any sort of Hegelian synthesis, and everyone's in this big tent. It's like we are the 99%. All I wanted to say to that is that sort of we are the 99%, that was the dominant chant in sort of the fall, and whereas now in May or whatnot, the dominant chant is Ati Capitalista. And so there clearly has been some resolution of the internal contradictions between all these ideologies. I mean, I'm an evidence of this. You know, I went there as sort of a liberal and became, you know, a Marxist. And so you see that people are forced in these discussions that were opened up by the movement to resolve their contradictions in their ideologies. And so perhaps a lot of these people, in fact, I mean, I've seen a number of former liberals become anarchists. So there has been sort of development of theory. It's just that, you know, maybe there weren't enough Marxists in there to push these people in the right direction. Because I honestly only discussed things with like two or three Marxists and maybe like hundreds of anarchists over the 6 months. And I had to sort of find my own way to Marx. So just throwing that out there.
What did you say the new slogan was?
Anti-capitalista.
Just that as a chant?
Yeah, anti-capitalista.
Ati?
I don't know.
Is that Greek?
I think it's Italian or something. I don't know.
Okay, we're here. Waiting press for time, Jim.
Well, you know, first of all, I think the Occupy movement, was a success. Is a success in the sense that it's opened up the dialogue politically in this country for the first time in quite a long time. Whatever one thinks about, and believe me, I share all the opinions and far stronger comments I've said to people in person for months. I think that it's incumbent on those who feel that they're, I come from the 60s, I have an instinctual reaction. I remember Progressive Labor Party arguing you can't have revolutionary practice before you have revolutionary theory, and they would do nothing except criticize everybody else. So I have sort of an instinctual reaction when I hear people talk about the need for revolutionary theory. I remember how, and I'm not saying this is what's being discussed now, I just remember in the past how it would basically be a excuse to do nothing. So that's where I sort of have a little empathy for the anarchists in some way, because I give them the kudos they deserve. However, I think the time is now for all sorts of ideas to enter the bouillabaisse, because it's a bouillabaisse going on there. We all know this. You know,
that's,
I mean, who would have expected that they would have triggered a bouillabaisse? Who would have expected that they would have triggered mass support for most Americans? In opinion polls, it blew my mind. Even large segments of Republicans. So that, to me, says that there is a tremendous amount of discontent. Bill raised the Ron Paul and the conspiracy stuff. I hear that all the time. I have contempt for those attitudes, but you know, one has to sit there and deal with them, because what did they come from? They come from this inherently American tradition of trying to explain dysfunction. Conspiracy. This is American apple pie going back to the Salem witch trial and starting from there. So there's nothing new about this. There needs to be, some people here involved in the free university process, I think there has to be constant, with all sorts of people involved, self-reflection about what the hell's going on. I mean, that's, you know, someone was here at that meeting on Sunday, I was arguing, and will argue that that would be something beneficial and do it again and again and have all sorts of different ideas, including yours, in the mix. Because people have to think. Anti-intellectualism is ridiculous, you know, but intellectuals sometimes, in their commentary about what's going on, have no concept about what's been really going on in this whole situation. That's my problem with some of the comments I hear from colleagues, because I teach politics at a university level. So I've been sort of stunned by some of the comments that people have, which have very no relationship to what I've seen up front. You know, and that's where we have to interact with it. We can't retreat from it. We've got to just plunge right in there and interact with it. And you know, and work with it and figure something out, all of us together.
Okay, Ann, you're going to get the last word because we've got to vacate the premises.
I'll say something positive before I say something negative. You are inspiring me, you know, to go to some more events. I'm not sure how you know when something's going to be a good discussion or not, though, because there are some very peculiar elements there and ways of doing things. But just on the question of what made Oakland so different, what is that they have a very good dock workers union on the West Coast, the opposite of, we have a really thinky one on the East Coast, but they have like one of the last real fighting militant unions. And so the Occupy, not only in Northern California, but Washington as well, they linked up, and the students make up most of the Occupy, or ex-students, unemployed former students, you know, and they recognized that they could learn something from the workers and they could have a part in the workers' movement, and I think that makes all the difference. What distresses me about the Occupy here and some of the others, I think, is that they seem to think they can sort of substitute middle class white discontent for a workers' movement, and I don't think you can. I mean, it's only the workers who can stop, actually, the wheels of capitalism and they can throw it, but not just on that level. It's only the workers who have the ideas about how to change society, or at least what to get rid of in society, that's crucial to having a real revolution. And the other thing I want to say is that I think we've made pretty clear tonight that not all Marxists are alike, and we don't agree with a lot of the people who call themselves Marxists. So it doesn't mean that anyone there is interested in Marxist humanism, even if they call themselves a Marxist. And it doesn't even mean that they're anti-capitalist if they call themselves anti-capitalist, I'm afraid, because so many of them don't even know what capitalism is, and it's just another thing that we're against. You know, now we're against racism and sexism and homophobia and capitalism without any understanding of what's the relationship of these things, how they're organic to the society, and how you have to understand them in order to get rid of them. So, you know, it reminds me of the early days of the women's movement when people learned to be politically correct and add, you know, women's rights to the list of anti-war, anti-racism, et cetera. But it doesn't necessarily mean anything. But with capitalism, it's essential. If you don't understand how the damn society functions, you're not going to be able to fundamentally change it. I'm sorry, you're just not. You can have revolt after revolt, and you can get massacred. I mean, it happens all the time when people revolt. It doesn't mean you're going to be able to uproot capitalism. The first thing is to understand it, and that's what distresses me. I'm glad there's a lot more interest than there used to be, but I'm not sure how deep it is. And, you know, I think that's really essential to present there, is to discuss that. And, you know, they have talks on the economy, and they're mostly, from what I've heard, pretty superficial. You know, they need to have climate, if I can be partial, because this book is totally different from the popular view of what the crisis and recession were about. So I think, you know, whereas I'm glad you're enthusiastic and you all want to go back and do stuff, I think, you know, as I've said all meeting, that we really have to take a look at what's worth doing and what can be done, and some recognition of the role of the importance of getting theory right.
Hey, thank you. We got to get out of here. So can mingle.
Wait a second. Announcements.
Yeah.
Bill is speaking on Peruvian indigenous movements. Do you want to give the details?
I was in Peru in March on assignment for the Progressive magazine, looking into a really amazing struggle which has been going on there, which has been received practically no coverage in this country, in the northern province of Cajamarca. The indigenous peasants have repeatedly had a general strike and shut it down, and martial law was declared there last year to prevent a mining project from going forward, which would be extremely ecologically destructive and would mean some highland lakes being destroyed, which local communities depend on for their water, and even the local regional government has now thrown its support behind the peasant movement and has declared against the project, and the supposedly left-wing populist government of Ollantahumala is being completely intransigent and supportive of the project. So the lines are drawn, and it's going to be very interesting to see which way it goes, and I'm going to be speaking about it on
Thursday.
On Tuesday.
Oh, you changed it?
Tuesday the 15th at the Brecht Forum.
Wrong, that's all. Okay, you're right. I thought it was Thursday.
Your relief looks...
Okay, pass them in.
Okay, any other announcements?
Yeah. I actually do. I can bring you flyers, because I'm... But, WOWS, Women Occupying Wall Street, we're having the first feminist General Assembly on the 17th of May in Washington Square Park from 6:30 to 9.
We formed about 4 months ago a working group called Occupy Drama that has, at this point, performed 10 plays in various venues in New York, including a Sam Shepard play that was off-Broadway at Reed's Showcase. And you're welcome to have people get involved. We now have 5 acting groups involved. They're coming through WBAI Radio and getting involved in that. Also, this Saturday at the Mayor's Office on Veterans Affairs, there will be a seminar on Iraq, the Iraq War, but concentrating on the battles of Fallujah. And that starts at 1 o'clock. That will have veterans, including a battalion commander from the Marine Corps, talking about that. And the reason I stress that is that, you know, we're in a different time now, you know, as Americans. And, you know, we have to really sit. You know, the problem I've had with Occupy is they have no theory about how to deal with the state's repressive force. None. And we got to really sit there and dialogue and try to reach out to that element of society that's in the quote 99%, if you will, to use that theoretical moniker, and really try to change them around. Because, you know, they won't succeed. No change will succeed if the state maintains a monopoly of force.
Okay. Another announcement?
Yes, yeah, Joseph, and this is very informational here, and I'm glad I came. I came not really, mostly to listen. But anyhow, my announcement, I invite everyone on Sunday, May 20th, is the AIDS Walk. And we are fielding this year for the first time an occupied AIDS Walk team. So I have cards with the team number. I'm coordinating that, Joseph Selman. I'm a person living with HIV for 25 years. I just want to say it also goes to the benefit of GMHC and 40 AIDS Service Organization. And for transparency, I get my service through GMHC. Thank you. You can just call a number if you care or if you know anyone who would like to, that's the number there, 9339. It takes off at 10 o'clock on the 20th. We walk through the park, exit on 110th Street, cross 110th Street, and back down there. So,
guys, hello. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Just that the someone mentioned the free university, planning for the free university extension throughout the summer is going to occur Sunday at 6 p.m., likely at the Teresa Lang second floor room of 66 West 12th Street at the New School. So planning for the free university, 6 p.m. Sunday, New School.
Is that every Sunday or is this Sunday?
It was last Sunday, it will likely be this Sunday. Location isn't 100% confirmed, but it certainly will be a 6 p.m. meeting. And I encourage everyone to attend.
Okay, we got to go. So,
all right. You do have
sign the mailing list
our,
and look at literature.
Yeah. You do have time to buy literature and gift cards.
Mother's
Day.
Mother's Day.